We are just about through with our bit masking fun. We left off in the middle of this extra credit. I at least want to finish the first extra credit here, and then I want to just throw a little something at you just to show what you can do with this bit masking stuff, or really about BPF filters more than bit masking. All right, so I'm at the point of, I've read through the directions more than one time at this point, so I think I know what it's asking me. It's looking for some DNS thing, and apparently there are a couple of things I need to know. I have already populated my filter with UDP packets that are involved in port 53, because I think that's what we're going to be talking about here. And then it's got this other stuff. It's looking to find out, it's looking for queries that have additional records. That's what I think all of these paragraphs boil down to. Does that sound right in your interpretation? Queries with additional records. It then gives me a clue. It says, the indication of a query is a zero in the QR field. Now I'm looking at the header we got here. In the picture of the header, let me just put it on the screen here so you can see what I'm looking at, what I'm pointing at. You've also got this header in your quick reference guide. I think this one is easier to read than the quick reference guide. The quick reference guide is a little bit tough to read, I think. But looking at this, we've got, this is 4 bytes wide, so it's what we're used to, right? We could say these are bytes. There we go. I've got, 0, 1, 2. So in the second byte, this QR field is sitting way up in the top of that thing. Oh, wait a minute. I think it is. Yeah, it is. Okay. This 1516 thing here was confusing me. Okay. So there we go. So it's sitting there in the very high bit of 0, 1, 2 of the second byte. Inside of the DNS header. I want to zero in on that. So I can look at this thing as two nibbles. This part of the nibble is going to be zero. I don't care about that. This would be 1, 2, 4, 8. So I'd be looking for a 0x80 sitting up there. And I'm going to need to do some masking because I have no idea what is going to be going on inside of opcodes or AAs or TCs or ARDA. I don't even know what those things are. At least I don't right now. We'll talk about DNS tomorrow. So I'm going to mask everything else off. How do I get at that? Well, unfortunately, there is nothing inside of TCP dump that's going to let me say, go to the DNS header and look inside of that at offset 2. There's nothing that does that. So I'm going to have to do an offset from another header. Let me just flip back over here. I'll just add this piece on. So DNS, and I don't know if I need parentheses or not, but I hate going backwards, so I'm just going to open this up with parentheses. I feel like that would be a nice thing to contain this sucker. I can't refer to the DNS, but I can refer to the header above it. The header above it, I already know, is going to be UDP, because I've narrowed it down, only UDP packets. So let me look at UDP. Now, again, our extra credit questions are often asking you to draw on knowledge you don't yet have, because they're extra credit questions. It's for more advanced folks. UDP packets, I mentioned yesterday, these headers are 8 bytes long. They are always 8 bytes long. Remember that? Well, if I know that the UDP header is 8 bytes long, and then I want to go to the second offset inside of that. Right? So let's see. So offset 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that would be the end of the header. Offset 8 would be the beginning of the payload, in this case the DNS stuff. Then I want to go 2 more bytes. So I could write it like that, 8 plus 2, and that is 10. It is equally valid to write it as 10. You can just write 10 if you want to. Do you mind if I leave it as 8 plus 2? Sometimes I prefer to do that because it is clearer for someone else who comes and looks at this later what I'm doing. And that will be more clear to you when I give you my second example. Okay. So I'm looking in that field, and I want to mask that against 0x80, and I want to see if I have a 0x80 left. Are you with me? Could I do that other ways? Yes, sir. I think it's indicating. No, I might be wrong. But that identification number, I can't imagine the ID number is 15 bytes long. I'm thinking it's 2 bytes long, 16 bits. Am I misreading that? I could be. I don't deal with DNS every day. I think I think this is 16 bits. Oh, wait, whoa, I'm sorry. I'm over here drawing and pointing at things, and you can't see what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the ID number inside of that header, and I'm thinking that this is 16 bits. I think it's 16 bits, or 2 bytes, because a 16 or a 15-byte ID number would be absolutely enormous. Does that sound good? Ah. So he asks an interesting question. He says, now, before I go back to that, are you okay, Cyrus? We're good? Okay. So let me just flip back over here. He asks an interesting question. He says, all right, now, okay, I'm with you, but what if I took off that port 53 there? What if I just said UDP and that? Would it still work? Well, it would find the DNS queries, but it will also find any other UDP packet that happens to have that bit turned on at that offset. Yeah, so I think we're going to keep the and DST port 53. And I think that that's okay the way it is. I think we're going to check that. Remember, I like to build these in pieces. But before, let's see if it works. Oh, I get nothing back. So I've done something wrong, I guess. Oh yeah, I have done something wrong. What did it tell me and what did I look for? Look in the paragraph, look in the last paragraph, the fourth paragraph. The indication of a query is what? Oh, and what did I look for? I looked for a 1. So this should actually be looking to see if it's a 0. Ah, okay, that's better. Always good to test these things in pieces, because if I added more mass to this, I would have been looking for the wrong problem. Could I do that in another way? Well, sure I could. Let's make this worse. I want to ship that sucker over how far? Well, it's the topmost bit in a 1-byte field. So if I ship this sucker over by 7 bits, wouldn't that be the same thing? I could do it without the mask. Was that a bad thing for me to do? Should I back away from that slowly and just put the mask back up here? Are you happier with that? But for those of you who are tracking on that, that means I've just shifted all the bits over. The only bit left is the QR bit. So I could approach it in that way. I'll leave the mask up. I need a little bit more. It then says, what do I want here? I want to look at the resource record, the additional record, actually, and see if there's stuff in it. Now, wait a minute. How do I do that? Anyway, you cannot check the actual presence. So what do I need to look for? Sorry, hang on. Oh, there's a field down here. Let me put the sync up here. So I can't, it's saying you can't really look here. You actually can, but we're not going to, because that would be a vastly complex filter. Instead, it's a lot easier to just look here. That's what it's saying. Let's see if that has a non-zero number in it, the number of additional records. Now let's start. Let's look at this header here. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. 10 and 11. Are you with me so far? So this would be DNS, if I could do such a thing, DNS colon 10, sub 10 colon 2. That would be 10 and 11, right? Did I count that right? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. I can't do DNS though, so what do I have to do instead? I have to do UDP. Okay, let's just take that, let's carry that over here. Because I've already done something similar to that. Let me add an and. UDP sub, whoops, and. UDP sub 8. I'm looking into the data plus 10. Right? Which works out to be actually the answer that's in the book there, the 18. It is 18. Someone thought it might be another number there. It is 18. Colon 2. Whoa. That right there could be risky. Now, someone asked me about operator precedence. Frankly, I'm not real sure if it's going to try to go to 10 and get 2 bytes and then add 8. I don't know what that's going to do. So a much safer thing to do would be to put that arithmetic inside of parentheses. That would be much, much safer. Does that make sense to you? Because now it's clearly going to 18 and getting 2 bytes. That feels safe. And I'm going to see if that is, I think I'm going to see if that is greater than 0. That seems like a fair thing to do. What?
Close parentheses.
Close paren. Well, no, I'm still doing this one. Yeah, I'm still inside of that one. So this guy is contained, and then that guy is contained. Yeah. I think that's what I'm looking for. Now, how do I know if that's the right answer or not? You know what? Let's just look in the book over here and actually go to the answer section. Let's just see. Extra credit. Oh, let's compare. Judy got 1, 2, 3, 4 packets, and I got, how many packets did I get? I got 4 packets. Are we looking good? I think we're looking okay. We're going to discuss DNS in a lot more depth tomorrow. So we'll talk about other ways that within TCP dump, it will actually do the decode of that application layer. It gives you some feedback on what's happening with the resource records and stuff like that. I'm not going to distract us with that at the moment because we'll cover it later. This was much more about more advanced ways I can use it, offsets from other headers. And with that in mind, actually, I want to show you something you could do with this. Now, what I'm about to do is probably the wrong way to approach this problem, but sometimes you don't have a great way to approach it. What I'm doing is a bit contrived. I want to find web traffic that are GET requests. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a web traffic that is a GET request. There are absolutely way better tools to do this. This would not be the way to do it. However, you will run into protocols from time to time that are just not well understood by whatever tool you have. With DNS, for example, as widely used, I mean, how widely used is DNS? Is it possible for something to be more widely used? I mean, you don't use the internet without it. SourceFire doesn't actually support us creating rules that deal directly with the DNS header. You've got to do all kinds of crazy bit masking things to get it fields. You know why? Because writing a DNS parser is hard. It's a lot easier to make people write bit masking tests. That's, you know, way easier for the manufacturer. Unfortunate, but that's how it is sometimes. So it could be weak support. It could be an unusual protocol. We're going to use HTTP because it's an easy one. And I will tell you that usually, it actually doesn't have to be, but, you know, let's not get into that depth right now. Usually, HTTP is going to be over TCP. And that if it's a GET request or any kind of request, that GET is usually going to be in the first few bytes of the payload. I'm picking an easy thing to find. I would like to look for things that are TCP and TCP port 80, or yeah, I'll just say port 80. I'm violating my own rule there. And now I need to get my hands on the data. How can I do that? I'm going to talk my way through this, okay? I'm going to talk my way through it, and then we're going to cover the TCP header. So just kind of watch this for now. I'm going to say, I want to go to, well, let me find out. Where would the data be? The data is not actually listed in there. Instead, there's a data offset field or a header length field. I think you'll find it in offset 12, if I remember correctly. So I believe in TCP sub 12, there is an offset field. And the offset field, it is in the top of the byte. It's in the top half of the nibble. So what I'm doing right here is I am grabbing that value. Whoops. I am grabbing that value. Fantastic. I've got it there. And then what I want to do, I need to take what I've got there, and I need to, let me shift that down. Let me shift it down 4 bits. Have I taken an extra step? Yes, I could have. I could have just shifted the thing down. I'm doing all the steps. I'm just working my way through it. Shift it down 4 bits. So let's say that there was a 5 sitting there, much like I would have with an IP header, a 5. It was 50. I made it 50, and now I've shifted it down. It's just a 5. And then I'm going to take that thing, and I need to multiply it by 4. And that should give me the number that is where the data begins. And I can refer to that. So I'm doing this calculation based on a field that's sitting in the header, figuring out where the data is. Now I'm accessing the data using a TCP reference. And in fact, I want to do more with that. Colon 4 and Now, what I really want to check out is the word get. I want to look for the string get. I don't actually remember what the ASCII codes are for G, E, and T. I probably work out the E. You know, I'm good enough for doing that. But let's just pull up an ASCII chart here. Let's cheat. Here's an ASCII chart, and we're looking for, sorry, that's small. We're looking for, capital G. So you guys are, well, I'll just write this down here. So what do we got? Capital G is a hexadecimal 4-7, and the E is going to be a 4-5, and the T is going to be a 5-4. Okay, I've got those letters. 6-7. What? I think it was a 4-7. Yeah, G is a 4-7, right? 4-7. Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a 4-7. All righty. So here's what I'm going to do with that. I'm going to take that and I'm going to mask it. Mask it? Why aren't you saying this? Equal to G-E-T. Why aren't I saying that? Well, because I can't grab 3 bytes. I can only grab 4 bytes. So I'm going to mask that against 0x. 4-7-4-5-5-4-0-0. Gonna make that all go away. And, let's see. Wow, I've got crazy stuff going on here. Alright, that looks okay. I think I'm gonna throw some parentheses around this, cause man, I just can't keep track of where stuff is now. Alright. And I wanna see if that is equal to 0x4745-5400. Okay, did I just hurt myself with that? No, I think I'm okay. Well, let's, oh man, syntax error. I broke my other rule, didn't I? What did I say you should do along the way? Build little pieces and then check along the way. Oh man, I really messed myself up. I am not going to try to fix this thing. Because man, that would be bad. You can make some crazy expressions here, right? My point is, this right here, this is actually an amazing capability, and I'm using this tool in an awful way. But you can take and do a calculation based on a value sitting in a field, you can mask it, shift it, whatever you want, then multiply it and use that as an offset to something else, and which is actually an incredibly powerful thing. Let's say that you wrote a filter, some insane thing like that, to deal with some crazy protocol you had that you wanted to identify some issue or do troubleshooting or whatever. What should you immediately do with that after you get it working? You should save that thing. Because I believe that this, along with a couple of other programming languages we have, this is a write-only language. This is a write-only language. If you want to say IP sub 0 equal to 0x45, anybody can get that. But that thing, that is just bad. And we could make it worse, right? I could come in here and say, well, let's see here. I'm shifting down by 4, and then I'm multiplying by 4. So really, I could just shift it by 2 and get rid of that multiplication. Wouldn't that be the same? Which is simplifying it, but at the same time, it's complicating it for the next guy who looks at it, isn't it? The colon 4 is saying grab 4 bytes. So this piece is saying, calculate what the offset is, and then it's saying, grab 4 bytes from that offset. So I can do the comparison after that. Wow, that's nasty. It is unusual to write something that complex. Know that you have the ability to do it. Okay? Or at least the, maybe not the ability, but certainly the possibility exists for it to happen. How about that? Okay? All right. That's enough fun with bit masking, don't you think? Let's talk about TCP, UDP, and ICMP. We're going to do the TCP piece first. The TCP piece is a little bit longer than the other ones, and there's parts of it that are going to go pretty fast because some of it is going to be review, and we've kind of mentioned it along the way. I'd like to also just ask you, I mean, how's it working out for you guys, for me wandering around with this thing and highlighting things on the slide. Is that working out for you, or is it distracting? Or okay. Because I'm doing it for the online people, but if it distracts you, I'll stop. Let's see. All right, so dissecting packets, TCP. Here we go. Hey, there's the TCP header. Oh my goodness, we've got another one of those header things, and we're going to start by talking about that offset field, which is where I just was. That offset sits in offset 12. It's got two names. You might see it called the TCP header length, but it is also the TCP data offset. If you think about that for a second, they mean exactly the same thing. Where does the data begin? At the end of the header. So if I looked at this as a header length, well, that's fine. That's how long the header is. If it's a data offset, well, that's fine too, because it's exactly where the data begins. Same thing. This field, you'll note, is also 4 bits, and exactly like the IP header, you have to take whatever's in it and multiply it by 4. There is a difference, though, between this, or two differences, between this and the IP header. One of the differences is, as I was doing a couple of minutes ago, it is in the high part of the nibble. So if you actually wanted to do something with it, you're going to have to shift it down to the right. The other thing that is different, is it unusual to find an IP header? Now, listen to the question. I'm not asking, is it illegal? Is it unusual to have an IP header that has a 4.6 or a 4.7 or a 4.8? Is that unusual to have IP options on a... That is unusual. We rarely use IP options. But in TCP, it is unusual to not have any. Now, that didn't used to be the case, but it's gotten to that point where if you've got a 5 in there, that's actually kind of a head-scratcher. Why aren't there any options on that thing? So you will see a lot of other numbers besides a 5. It's just indicating options. And just like an IP, the options have to be padded out by 4 bytes because you can't have anything less than a 4 because we multiply the number by 4. Okay, fantastic. Here we've got an example of a header length. We've got some options in there. You can just see we've got the hexadecimal 0A, or I'm sorry, A0 sitting in there. And as long as we're looking at one of these, I am going to continue to do this to you guys. Let's look at this packet here. I'd like you to, let's see how far we can go with our IP header. You ready? So I'm looking over here. So what can you tell me about this IP header? It's a 20-byte header. What type of IP is it? Version 4. What's going on? What's the next field? TOS. What's going on in there? Nothing. What's coming after that? We got a total length field. We've got the 003C. That's how big the thing is. I'm not going to make you calculate it. And after that, we've got... Now, I gave you a trick for remembering this one. The trick is to look at the thing right after it. Ah, this is the what? This is the IP ID or the fragment ID. So... 1-way and 1A8, that's going to be the fragment ID. Following that, we've got the fragmentation flags. And this one is 4000, super common. What's the 4 position mean? 2 is more fragment. It's don't fragment. So 4000, super common. This is a non-fragmentable packet. Following that, time to live. So we've got a 4.0 or a 64. What kind of embedded protocol is in this thing? TCP. We've got a 0.6 in there. What's this next field? Now, I'll be honest. I always forget this field. It is the checksum. I always forget this field. I always look at it and say, what the heck is that? And the way I usually figure it out is I know if this is a 4.5, I know this header ends here, and I know the last thing in it is the destination address. And the thing before that would have to be the source address. So the only thing left is the checksum. I always forget the checksum. How'd you guys do? Did you do pretty good? How many of you answered those questions without looking up here? Oh, I see people. Is it Cyrene? Serene. Serene's like, oh, look. I told you it would happen, right? Okay. But now we're really focused on what's going on in the TCP. Over here, we've got the A0, so it's going to be 10 times 4. It's a 40-byte header. It's twice the normal length. That means that all of these bytes here are going to be making up TCP options. Now, we just did this. You did an awesome job. Fantastic. I'm not going to make you do it again. There is a different question, though, that we have. In this packet here, the question is TCP header and data, how many bytes of data? How many bytes of data? I think we're actually looking at a different packet now, aren't we? Yeah, we are. So the header is 20 bytes, so we're highlighting that guy, 20 bytes of header. Then we've got, what's that? 20 bytes of TCP header. How much data is there, though? Well, I've got the total length is 5B, or 91. I have 20 bytes of TCP, 20 bytes of IP. That's 40 bytes of header. So how much data do I have? 51 sounds good. Does that sound fair? Yeah. I do not have to deal with the trailer. The reason I don't deal with the trailer now, and I almost never do, is because I'm looking at a packet. Now remember our difference? That means the frame is gone. That is part of the Ethernet encapsulation. So IP never will take into account that because that's an outer level protocol. All right, fantastic. We got the answer. How about this one? How many bytes of TCP data? Well, how long is the IP header? 20 bytes. And you know because of this 5 here. And what's the embedded protocol header? It is TCP. How do you know? 06. Is this a fragmentable packet? No, it isn't. We've got 400. That's don't fragment. How big is this packet, the whole thing? 5A, excellent. I like that answer a lot. 5A? Yeah, I don't want to know what it is really in reality anyway. And then, okay, so if 4-5, then that means that, see, this becomes just a visual thing. I know that this part here is where that IP header ends. So 8C6E, that's the start of the embedded TCP packet. We're not at the point of marching through that header yet, but we'll do that soon. But I do know that if that's the start of the TCP header, if I count it in to the 12th offset, I would be at 8-0. 8-0. How long is the TCP header? What? 32 sounds good. Why is it 32? Times 4. So 8 times 4, 32. So I've got 20 bytes of IP, 32 bytes of TCP, that's 52, right? And my total size was 5A. Anyone want to convert that for us? Ooh, he says, that's 90. Good for you. I hope you're right, because we're going to check you now. So 90 minus, what was it, 52? So whatever's left over. What's that work out to? 38? Does that sound about right? Let's see. How'd we do there? Oh, he got it. 32. Very nice. Oh, I'm sorry, 38, there it is. Very, very nice. That is the answer. You're all tracking with that? You understand how we arrived at that? Okay, fantastic. In our slides yesterday, it was talking about some of these things are static, some of these things are stored in there, it tells you how long it is, some of these things are derived. We're now using two of those. It's telling me how long the IP header is, it's telling me how long the data is, but the whole thing is, how much data is that? That's derived. So that's how all those things fit together. Excellent. Let's talk about some theory about how these suckers work. We haven't done UDP yet. UDP is later today. It is a much, much easier protocol. It is a much faster protocol, sometimes called the send and pray protocol, because it is connectionless, it is sessionless. You just fire a packet out. If it gets there, it gets there. If not, who knows? TCP, on the other hand, is connection-oriented. It implements state. It's got sessions associated with the thing. The protocol itself, the TCP layer, will take care of all the reassembly and the ordering of the packets, making sure you get the data in the right order. Retransmissions, that is all the network's problem. All of that stuff means slower. It all means slower. So UDP is faster. But if I care about the ordering of the data and whether or not it's all there and that I have to implement all of that in my application. So it's a trade-off. TCP tends to be slower, but a lot less work for the developer. TCP has some other particular things about it. TCP is unicast only. So that means that you could send a SYN to a broadcast address. How many people will answer you? Unicast only. So I can send it to a broadcast address. How many people will answer me? None, because it is a unicast-only protocol. It is smart enough to say, no, I don't answer those. What else here? Sequences data, I said that. Accounts for the vast majority of stuff on the Internet. Great. We'll see a lot of this stuff. We already know the three-way handshake, session initiation. SYN, SYNAC, ACK. Just to define those fields for us, and we're going to define the rest of them too. Sin means synchronize. It's not actually start. It means synchronize. And it's asking to synchronize sequence numbers. We'll define those in a second too. The ACK bit, we sometimes will fall into a bad habit of saying that that means we're acknowledging data. That's not really what that bit means. The only thing that that bit means is that the value found in the acknowledgement number field is valid. That is literally what that means. You go read the RFC, that's what it means. The value found in the acknowledgement field is valid. So when I say SYN, it means I want to start talking. You'll answer me with a SYN ACK. In fact, SYN means I want to have a connection to you so I can send data that way. That's what SYN means. I want to synchronize my sequence number with you. When this guy sends a SYN back this way, what is he saying? I didn't ask about the ACK. I asked about the SYN. What's he saying? He's saying, I'd like to establish a connection with you to have a conversation going in this direction. So in fact, this is we say it's a full duplex connection. In fact, it's not exactly that. It's actually two half duplex connections that happen to be going over the same IP port pairs. We'll call it full duplex because, you know, hey, that's what it looks like. But I'm establishing a connection in one direction, so there's a SYN this way, and then he is establishing a separate connection going the other direction. Oh, and by the way, he's also acknowledging the connection that you wanted to create. He's doing that too. So it's a three-way handshake. If we look at that inside a TCP dump, you can see here we go. We've got some packets going back and forth. There are a variety of things that you can track in this to see what's happening in the connection. You could, for instance, focus on what's happening in the flags. Over here we can see the SYN followed by the SYN ACK. Now there's a weird thing here. Neither of us know the answer to this one. I heard Andrew talking before. I don't know why they chose to do this, but to indicate that the ACK bit is turned on, there's a little dot that appears inside of those square brackets. Why didn't they put an A in there? I have no idea. That's lost in the mists of history, but they put a dot there. It's a very mysterious thing, I guess, you know. More than likely, just as a guess, this thing creates text-based output, and I absolutely can imagine that they had this piped out into some kind of awk script or cut script or something to post-process, and probably there was some other A that would show up somewhere, and it was just easier to stick a dot in to make that other problem go away. So that's probably how it happened, but I don't know for sure. So we could look. We see the SYN, SYN ACK, ACK. That's what we expect to see. But there's other fields happening, too. We also have the sequence numbers happening. So here it is, exactly the same connection, but not looking at the flags, looking at the sequence numbers. He sends in a 140.7137694. It's a 32-bit value. The other side sends back his own sequence number. It's an entirely unique value. 743334558, and he sends an acknowledgement number too. 140.7137695. Now that might look familiar, but it is slightly different than what was sent to us. It's incremented by one. And notice that in the final ACK, so he was at 694, he is now at 695, it's this value. He was here, 58558, and the ACK is for 559. You see that? I want to try to break you of a bad habit before it even happens, okay? Things you will hear that are not true. Oh, the acknowledgement number is always one more because it's saying what number it expects to get next. No. Oh, yeah, no. Every time an ACK comes, it's always going to be incremented by one in every packet. It's always going to be... No. That's not what happens. See this down here? If you go read the RFC, for some reason that I don't really know, doesn't need to have happened, but they chose to do it this way, the implementers of TCP/IP, they said the SYN consumes a byte in the communication, and so does the FIN. Each one of them consumes a byte. So it is not moving up to one because it's saying, that's the next thing I expect you to send. No, it's not. It's because the SYN effectively counts as a byte of data, if you want to think about it that way. There's no data in the channel, but it counts as a byte. It is counted. And so does the fin. That's why that happens. You'll see more of that. We'll dig into that a little bit more. Anything else new here? Every new connection should have its own unique TCP starting number, sequence number. It should be randomly generated. That would be preferred. We'll look at some examples of that. The acknowledgement numbers are really just the other side's sequence numbers, so there's really nothing super different there. In fact, when you watch the conversation, what you'll tend to see is that the sequence number and acknowledgement numbers simply flip positions depending on who's talking. So when A talks to B, the sequence numbers are A's sequence numbers and B's acknowledgement number. When B talks to A, the sequence number is B's and the acknowledgement number is A's. They just flip back and forth. And you'll see them grow as data is sent. The sequence numbers are used to keep track of data that is sent. I mentioned to you earlier, I got you thinking about the fact that when you send a SYN to someone, you are saying, I would really like to talk to you on this port. We talked about it in the three-way handshake, right? SYN, SYNAC, but that SYN is saying, I want to talk to you on this port. I want to open a connection with you. It turns out that when you look at network protocols, kind of think about them, and then do weird things with them, you can get them to do weird stuff. And I'm not going to prove this one to you right now. We do have a packet capture of it. But, you know, hey, can we craft packet captures? Sure, we could lie about stuff. We're going to prove to you that this is what happens. We're going to use undoctored TCP stacks on, I think it's Friday morning. When do we talk about Scapy now? I can't remember. Is that Wednesday or is that tomorrow? We're going to talk about Scapy tomorrow. We will prove to you tomorrow that undoctored TCP stacks will have this behavior right here on the slide. Now, this is crazy. This is not normal. I am going to send a SYN, this one right here. We're going to send a SYN. He then responds with a SYN. What? And then he answers with a SYNAC, and then he answers, what? Show me the packet, sir. It didn't happen, right? All right, here's what we're saying. So we have from 52709 to 999, SYN. 999 back to 52709 sends a SYN. There's no ACK. Sends a SYN. 52709 now answers that with a SYN ACK, to which 999 responds with an ACK. Oh, yeah, I'll finish that connection. That's kind of crazy. And I want to just point out to you why that's crazy and why we care about that. This is a super weird thing. I'll explore it more tomorrow. We'll show you with Scapy that it actually works. But very, very often, the way our security devices work is based on what their notion is of who the server is and who the client is. And whether the server is being defended, if it's on our network, or if the server is outside, who's the client, who's the server? So who do I defend? If I've got a machine that does some crazy four-way handshake, is it possible, is it even likely that my security stuff could see that stuff and become confused and believe that, now, the client is the guy who sent the first packet, right? But the server does not answer with a SYNAC. He answers with a SYN. So could the machine become confused and pretty much forget about that and just say, oh, our machine established a connection with him and he answered us? So the directionality of this communication becomes really questionable. How will our device react to that? How will our intrusion detection system or firewall deal with that?
Have you seen it call it data exfiltration before?
Yeah, it could be all kinds of crazy stuff. So being aware that bending the protocol, bending the rules, is a wonderful way to sneak around rules and sneak around detection. Again, we'll show you more about that tomorrow. There is another weirdness that can happen. This is extremely common. Or maybe extremely is too strong. It's common. It's very common. Fast open. Web servers are really a driver for a lot of adjustments that go on inside of TCP protocol stacks. Because our web servers have a huge amount of communication going on in the network, and they need to be fast. For that reason, they have a couple of things that violate how this protocol is supposed to work, or, in this case, have extended the protocol. Normally, we have SYN, SYNAC, ACK, and then we communicate, and then we close the connection. But in a web application, it is extremely common that I make a connection, and then I get a web page that tells me to go back there and get a whole bunch of pictures. And if all I'm going to do is open up another 15 connections, we are wasting a lot of packets doing session initiation. HTTP2 is one approach to this problem. We'll talk about that tomorrow afternoon. Another approach to this is this TCP fast open. The idea is, in our initial three-way handshake, which is still going to be a completely normal three-way handshake, in our initial three-way handshake, there are going to be some experimental TCP options used that's essentially tickling the server and saying, hey, do you support fast open? And if he does, he says, oh, yes, I do. Here's a ticket you can use, a cookie you can use. And the next time the client connects back to that machine, he can use that option with his ticket, with his cookie, with his key. The server will recognize, oh, yeah, that's a valid key, and it will begin processing the data that is sent on the SYN, which is unusual, too, sending data on the SYN. We usually wait until we're connected, right? He will begin processing that data before we've even completed the connection and will often send back data on the SYNAC, which is, again, something you don't typically see, all in an effort to speed up the communication, to make it more efficient. Now, we have a packet capture of this that's demonstrating it in the demo PCAPs. I actually was taking a look at this before class because I was looking for a very specific behavior that is not in it. At the high level, we can see there's some connections happening. At this level, at the packet list, you can't see the fast open. You just see there's a SYN, SYNAC, ACK. We've got the ports going back and forth over here. And then there's another connection, another connection. But there's not a lot to see. If we switch over, though, to the details of it, you can see more of what's happening. In the initial connection, we have a SYN packet coming in. And that SYN option includes, or SYN packet includes some options. I can see the header length here is 44 bytes. There's TCP options in it. One of the options is marked as experimental. FE is the experimental option. So FE is the option number. And then we've got a 4-byte option. The 4-byte option is F989. That option, that magic number, is being used. I'm sorry, I said the 4-byte option. The whole option is 4 bytes. So the FE04F989 is 4 bytes. The 2-byte magic number that says, I want to do TCP fast open, is the F989. If the server supports that, when it answers, it will send back an FE option, that same experimental option. In this case, he says, my entire response, I'm looking right here, my entire response is 12 bytes in length, 12 bytes of option. And he sends this F989, so there's that same magic number, followed by 261FB0. That is the cookie. That is your ticket. That is your key to have a fast open connection with me. That happens in the first connection. After that, when I create a new connection with you, I again use the FE option, and I tack in the magic number, that thing right there, and then the cookie, with data on my SYN, and you begin to process it right away. The thing that is not in that particular packet capture, it is not unusual to find that the server sends data back on the SYNAC. In that particular packet capture, it doesn't, so there's nothing interesting to see there. I'm not going to pull it up. But if you do pull that up and then follow the stream, following the stream, it just looks like normal web traffic. I mean, as much as that is normal web traffic, that actually looks like data exfiltration to me. But TCP fast open, it's not going to look different. This still exists. You'll see Microsoft things try to do this by default. You can change the behavior. But it's unusual to use this on the internet today. In Active FTP, sorry about that. My arm was getting tired. Pull that back up. In Active FTP, we begin with a three-way handshake here. Oops, with a three-way handshake here. Here we go. Three-way handshake up here. SYN, SYNAC, ACK. Push ACK, ACK. Okay, great stuff. And then up here, now I know it says FTP list command issued. That command is being issued here. This is the FTP command channel. We say, hey, I'd like to get a directory listing. No problem. It will then open a connection from port 20 to some higher numbered port on the client. Three-way handshake. Syn, Synec, ACK. That's odd. Now I'm glad we don't do this anymore. That's odd. Because usually you have a high numbered port going to a low numbered service port, right? What do we have here? Low numbered service port establishing an outbound connection to a high numbered ephemeral port. That's just crazy. This has been superseded. Largely because firewalls, this is a horrible thing for firewalls, right? So for a long time now, we've been moved to active FTP. Passive FTP. You'll still run into active FTP. It's just a protocol bender. This is what we tend to do. In passive FTP, the server sits passively for all connections. That's what that's about. In active FTP, it actively connects back to the client. Here it sits passively. We again have three-way handshake. We again have a directory listing happening up here. And inside of that, there is a port command, and it will do a passive mode transfer. And it has this 253,102. The 253,102 is a high and low byte for a 16-bit number. And if you were to translate that 16-bit number, you would find that that 16-bit number is equal to 64870. What it's doing is deciding or negotiating where will the server be listening passively for the next connection for the data channel. So they've changed it. It's still a weird protocol because we still have this first session. This is still being used for the command channel. This is being used for data. So it still has two connections. Actually, more than two connections. Every file transfer, every directory listing will be a new connection. But the command channel will still exist. So I'll just put command up here. Good? All right, fantastic. Let's talk about those TCP code bits then. We've got a feel for a bunch of these. SYN, synchronize my sequence numbers. We know what that's about. ACK, we already defined that. That means the acknowledgement number is valid. That's it. That's all it means. The reset bit means usually some error condition has occurred. Shut this thing down. Abort the connection. Bail out. FIN, we know, means stop the connection. The urge bit literally means the value in the urgent pointer is valid. Now, I don't have one super handy here, but if you look at your quick reference, you'll see that one of the last fields, if not the last field in your TCP header, is the urgent pointer, which, you know, even if you've looked at TCP, you may never have noticed it before because it's rare to use that thing. This bit simply means that value is valid. That's all this bit means. That's it. This is sometimes called the evil bit, the urgent bit. The push bit, you may have noticed I have strategically avoided. Here's what it means. The sender of the data is telling the receiver of the data, take whatever you have in your receive buffer and deliver it to the application now. Push does not mean there is data in this packet. If I want to send you data, I do not have to set the push bit on the packet. Push means take the data and deliver it to the application now. Because both ends of this connection are going to use buffers, receive buffers and send buffers. And usually we do not interrupt the processor and trigger an event to deliver data to the application until the receive buffer is full, or if the application is polling, if it's constantly checking, it'll just go get it. But once that thing is full, now we're going to say, hey, you need to do something about this. You need to service this data. The push bit says, do not wait for your receive buffer to fill. Tell the application it has data now. That's what it does. You will see the push bit used. Do not think that it means or it indicates that there is data here or must be there if there's data. Those things are not true. It's saying deliver the data now. The ECN bits we'll deal with separately. The ECN bits, these two guys over here. These are the two reserved bits in TCP, congestion window reduced and the ECN echo bit. That's what these two bits are. These two bits have been reserved for a really long time. And finally, when we decided the type of service was really ultimately dead and we'd like to do something different for congestion and for routing traffic more efficiently, ECN is born. But the only protocol, at least by RFC, that supports ECN is TCP. So while the ECN bits are also, or the differentiated services byte is in the IP header, we really can't talk about it until we talk about the TCP header too, because it's the only thing that uses it. Here's what it looks like if you're using ECN. The goal of it is to allow an intermediate router to notify a sender that there is congestion on the path. Notify the sender there is congestion on the path. Why notify the sender? Does our data have to follow a symmetric path? Now, I see people saying no to that. Good, I agree with you. When I say that, what do I mean? Does it have to follow a symmetric path? Does it? Can it be different? So the path, the route it takes to get from me to you, does it have to follow the same path to go from you to me? No. Okay, that's fair, but across the internet, right? It could take any path. I don't know. Asymmetric routing. In fact, even inside of our enterprises, sometimes we enforce asymmetric routing rules. Sometimes we choose to do it. Load balancers, all kinds of reasons could happen. So the packets do not have to take the same path going out as they do coming in. So what it allows to happen is the packets are on their way to their destination, and some router along the way says, oh man, I am just having a bad day. It is so busy over here. Listen, if you could just slow down, that's what it wants to say. But routers don't just send packets to people. So it needs a way to mark the packet so that when it makes the round trip, now the sender knows something happened. Here's how that works. If we are going to try to use ECN, during the SYN-SYNAC act, during the three-way handshake, you will find that the ECN bits in the differentiated services byte are cleared. They are all zeros. And you will see in the very first SYN that both the congestion window reduced and ECN echo bit are both enabled. If the host on the other end supports ECN, when it sends the SYNAC, it will clear the CWR bit and leave the ECN echo bit turned on. The differentiated services byte is still zero. Why does it clear one? Why doesn't it leave them both on? Because TCP, IP stacks do crazy things because they're not all very well written. Some of them, you throw in crazy bytes on the way in, it'll just leave those things turned on the way out. It doesn't know what they mean, it'll leave them alone. So this seemed like a best case approach. If we intentionally turn it on, do you seem to turn one of them off and leave the other on? That indicates you know what I'm talking about. You speak my language. If that happens, notice that the one now moves down into the ECN bits in the IP header, and the echo and congestion window reduced are cleared in the TCP header. We now have communication. So you will see these bits flipping back and forth, 0 and 1, in the IP header. The TCP header, these bits are still cleared. Nothing's going on. But if congestion is experienced, when it happens, the router in between will enable whichever bit is turned off in the IP header and allow the packet over. The receiving host is going to see that these bits are both on and these bits are both off. So what he will do, he'll leave these on and turn on the echo bit. He's echoing back to the sender, hey, there was a congestion. When the receiver gets that, he leaves these bits on and he now turns on the congestion window reduced. He's going to slow down how fast he sends data. That's what's going to happen. I do not find a lot of things that actually speak ECN. You have some? It's not really an application layer thing. It's a network stack layer thing. So it's whether or not your OS or your network stack supports it. I do not run into ECN a heck of a lot. It's there. It's an approved standard. Even if you're running it, you need routers along the way that understand ECN. I just don't see it a lot. But it's still bears mentioning because I'm interested in odd anomalous behaviors. If I see weird things going on in these ECN bits in the TCP header, here is the defined behavior for these. So if you're seeing some behavior other than this in those bits, that's anomalous. Or down in the differentiated services byte, if you see a SYN that has a value sitting in there, that is not explicit congestion notification. That is something else. In yesterday's book, there was something, there was a SYN packet, there was like a C0 in the type of service field. I don't know what the heck that is, but it's not valid. That's anomalous. I would not go that far to say seeing ECN is anomalous. No, I wouldn't say that. It's not that it's unusual. I just don't run into a lot of it. Yeah. How about you, Andrew? Do you see a lot of it? Yeah. 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 Sure. I mean, anybody could use it. It's really a matter of does your stack support it and do the routers along the way. And both stacks, both senders have to support it, both ends. Okay. Yeah, so if both sides don't support it, sorry, I keep accidentally flipping out of this thing. If both sides don't support it, it's simply going to, I clicked the wrong button. It's going to, it won't echo the bit back. It won't match, so it'll just stop. It'll just drop it. Yeah. No, it won't drop it. The routers along the way won't touch it because routers don't manipulate the headers. This is a special case where we're allowing the router to interfere with the header. All right, super, good questions. The urgent bit, the evil bit, it's just not used. I mean, its idea was sometimes you might want to send some out-of-band or emergency data that needs processing now. That was the idea of this thing, like hitting Control-C while you're scrolling through pages of stuff on a slow terminal. That was kind of the idea behind it. But there's a huge problem with it, the biggest reason it's not used. It turns out that the RFC is... The RFC is very unclear about how you interpret what the urgent pointer means. Not the urgent bit. That means the urgent pointer is valid. But what does the pointer mean? Where does it point? Does it point to the data, before the data, after the data? Where is it pointing? It's kind of unclear in the standard. And what that means is that you can find things like this behavior here. If you use Netcat, for instance, because it's an application-specific thing, how does the application handle it? If you use Netcat and you were to send data, in this case we're sending A through Z, and I were to set the urgent bit and mark the urgent pointer to point at offset 1 in the payload, it'll actually drop the A. The A goes away. It doesn't get processed, it just gets dropped. But see, different applications and different IP stacks, you might find that you keep the A, or maybe something else gets dropped, the B gets dropped. It's because it's very vague in the IP RFC for the urgent bit. So it's just not used. That turns out to be unfortunate because it means that there's a whole 2 bytes there that are just not getting used for anything hanging out in the IP header. And we'll talk more about that a little later in the week. Okay, let's see here. And how can you send data? You can send data in lots of different ways. This is what is allowed by RFC. So I can send data on the SYN. That is 100% legal. You will see some of that in this class, and it's also the TCP fast open. It's expected to happen there. You can set it with a push and ACK. You can set it with just an ACK. I already mentioned that. Urge push ACK is unusual. But the reason it's unusual is because urge is incredibly unusual, and this would be something that if you see an urgent bit, you should be looking at that. Yeah, that would be anomalous. That would be a sign of bad stuff. And you can also say it with a FIN. Okay, so all of those conditions, perfectly legal to send data. There are some things that are unexpected, though. The unexpected combinations, that would be like the SYN-FIN that I mentioned to you earlier, stuff like that. Why would we do it? Because bending the protocol sometimes allows us to derive information. I do it for mapping, I'd use it for host discovery, all kinds of stuff. But with the knowledge we have, we should be able to begin to detect anomalous behavior and be able to identify clearly normal stuff. So let's talk about what does it look like if someone is trying to connect and they're just failing, so they're retrying, versus someone who's running a scan or something like that. We should be able to tell the difference. If we're talking about a retransmission, I should see that some things stay the same. The source and destination, they remain the same. The source and destination ports remain the same. I'd expect the sequence numbers to remain the same. Let's see if we can identify this stuff. Which one of these two sets of data is a retry? Take your time. Take it in. Okay, on top. Any votes for on top? 1, 2, 3, 4, we got 5, 6, there's a bunch of people on top. Anyone want to vote for on the bottom? Got a couple on the bottom. All right, let's look at them both. In fact, we're going to look at them over a couple of slides here. Note here, the timestamps, well, we don't haven't talked about those yet. Let's not talk about that yet. Notice the source ports to the destination ports and the sequence numbers. In the top three, they're all the same. In the bottom one, we have source port 1024, then 1025, then 1026, and we have 1, 2, 3 different sequence numbers. They're close, but they're not the same. A retransmission, wouldn't that imply you're sending the same thing again? I'm retransmitting it. So I would expect all of those things to be the same. So the top set, that is going to be our retry. There is an interesting behavior in the timing. The bottom one happens to have about the same timing, so it's less interesting there. What's being highlighted for the timing is that it's typical to find a back-off timer. You'll usually find that the first retry is after maybe a second or two, then the next retry is after about 4 seconds, then about 8 seconds. If you're using a Windows machine, it uses pretty much a static. It doesn't back off. It just, you know, retries after a certain number of seconds. So that behavior can tell me things about the OS that's sending the packets. There's another thing that can show me a lot about the OS sending the packets. It's going to be the TCP options. Now, I don't have the TCP options in here. We're coming to them real soon. But they would be included inside of the checksum that's getting calculated, because part of the checksum is going to include the entire header, all of the options as well. This right here, though, this explains why IPv6 does away with its checksum. Why don't I need the checksum in the IP header if I'm using TCP? What?
I thought the router computed it or something.
No. With IPv6, routers never have to touch a checksum again in their lives. Where do those two fields come from? Well, the host is doing the work. That's right. Where do these two fields come from? Where? Those are in the IP header. Now, under IPv6, the pseudo protocol header checksum changes some because we've got, you know, much larger addresses. But the source and destination addresses are part of the checksum in the TCP header. And what else is included in there that IP doesn't ever look at? Well, the data's in there, too. IP only looks at its own header. That's it. So you know what? If the embedded protocol is going to include the addresses and cover all the data and everything else, well, heck, why are we bothering at the IP layer? So IPv6 did away with it. You do not have to calculate one of these checksums. That is what is included in it. When the checksum gets received, or when the packet gets received by the receiving host, it is the thing that is supposed to make the determination about the received checksum. If it's valid, it processes the packet. If it is not valid, it drops the packet. It does not process the packet. That means that if there is some corruption that occurs, perhaps at the IP level, and we still have a valid IP checksum, when that receiving host gets it, it's still going to drop it because the pseudo header checksum is going to be broken. You're not going to have both checksums remain the same. However, that is a potential way to get the IDS to ignore data. Because if the IP checksum is valid, but the TCP checksum is not, well, the host is going to drop it. But if the IDS doesn't, we could get the IDS to accept data that the host doesn't. We could confuse the IDS. We could break a signature match or something like that. No, the host wouldn't have any logs. The host wouldn't care because it would just drop the data. But the IDS, on the other hand, it would have extra data that it's accepting and thinking was real data that the host never saw. And that can confuse a signature match because it might get extra data in it. We'll show you that tomorrow afternoon. I'm a little bit ahead there. There is another challenge when it comes to these checksums. I'm going to come back to them. We've got it in a slightly different section. We've got segment checksum offloading, so we'll come back to that. The window size. The window size is specifying the size of a buffer. This is a 16-bit field inside of the header. This is how large your receive buffer is. That's what it is. How much space I have to get stuff that gets here. The size of this is completely OS dependent. It can even be reconfigured on host and sometimes by applications at the programming level, but usually it's left at the default. And it's not unusual to see this window size number change during a conversation. For instance, here we see host 122.129 has a window size. He begins at 5792, then he goes up to 7840, 10752. It's going up and up and up and up and up. And then, does it ever go down? Oh no, it never goes down. Which means that as he's processing data, he's pulling it out of his buffer, more space becomes available for processing. More typical, you'll see this start at some number and go down, and then you might see it kind of level off, and then maybe come up and dip, and it just depends how busy that host is. If the host is really fast and doesn't have a lot to do, you'll see it start at some number and never change, because it is processing the data just as quickly as you're sending it. Not unusual to see it change. What if that window size gets to zero, however? Well, if the window size gets to zero, that means your receive buffer is full. And if your receive buffer is full, it would be very foolish of me to continue sending you data. We can actually use the window size behaviors to do interesting, defensive, sort of active defensive things. There was a tool created a long time ago. This was when the Code Red Worm was making the rounds. But it's still a useful approach towards stuff. But that's when it was invented. Let's take a look at two flavors of this. The first flavor is we're going to manipulate the window size. It's not actually the main focus of what this thing is doing, but it's going to manipulate the window size. Its goal is to slow down fast-moving worms, to slow down infection rates. Here's what it looks like. With La Brea Tar Pit configured on my network, I can either tell it which addresses to own, or I can allow it to automatically discover which hosts are not in use. The way it figures that out, it sees an ARP who has come across the network. And then a few milliseconds later, it sees another ARP who has for the same host. If it sees a two ARP who has messages within a few milliseconds, guess what it assumes? What? Oh, not necessarily malicious, but it's because we're talking about ARP here. ARP is not routable. So I've got a packet that comes across the internet, wandering around, route, gets to my perimeter. My firewall, my router now tries to deliver it to a local host on the local subnet. In order to do that, we move from routing to bridging or switching. We now need to deliver at the link layer. So how does the router find the local host on the subnet? ARP. ARP who has? ARP who has? If no one answers, what does that mean? Nobody home. So if it sees two requests in a short period of time, it says, oh, hey, that's me. It will jump in, it will take over that address. And when it does that, so we have an ARP reply coming back, is at, it will now spoof a response to the connection. So we have the initial SYN now come in. The initial SYN has been pending. It has been waiting in the router. ARP, is at, now the SYN gets delivered. It answers with a SYNAC and says, oh, and by the way, my window size is 10. I have a 10-byte buffer, which is really small. If you only have 10 bytes, I'm not sure why you're even opening the connection, but that's fine, 10 bytes. This guy will complete the connection, SYNAC, and then you will see it try to send you 10 bytes of data. And then it tries to send you 10 bytes, and then it tries to send you 10 bytes, and 10 bytes, and 10 bytes, and 10 bytes. What doesn't La Brea ever do? it doesn't close it. It never answers. It never answers. So look at the timing. After 6 seconds, it tries again. Then after another, so this is plus 12, an additional, it doubles that. Then 24 seconds, then at 48, then at 96, and about 3 minutes later, it will assume the connection is dead and it's going to try to scan somebody else. But that's 3 minutes of time that it's not scanning somebody, right? That's the goal of La Brea. There's a much better approach toward this, though. Version 2 of La Brea, oh, this is devious. This is evil. Using your powers for good. That's evil powers used for good. Let's see what happens here. So we have sin, sinak, ak. Three-way handshake. Evil host is connected to our machine. Our machine answers the evil host and says, I have a window size of 5. This might look familiar, but it's not the same story you've already heard. We then see, after the three-way handshake, the evil host sends us 5 bytes. And La Brea says, thank you for those 5 bytes. Act 6, thank you for those 5 bytes. My window is now closed. My buffer is full. The host on the other end will, it'll wait around. And then after some time, it'll say, it's going to send another ack. It'll say, ack. And La Brea will say, oh, yes, ack, ack 6, window size 0. It's saying, oh, yeah, I have not forgotten about you, but my buffer is still full. I'm sorry, I can't deal with you right now. And every so many seconds, it's going to come back and it's just going to prod us again with an ack. And La Brea will say every time, I'm sorry, I really wish I could help you, my buffer is still full. This is a very devious approach. This takes no memory for La Brea. La Brea is just spoofing packets. It sees the 2 ARPs, it spoofs back a SYN-ACK, window size 5. It sees a packet come in with data, it will ACK that with a window size of 0. Whenever it sees another ACK come in, kind of trying to probe it, it just spoofs a response saying, Yeah, ack, window size 0, every time. How long will that keep the connection open? No, you don't really don't configure how long connections remain alive. How long will that stay open? What? Forever, until someone goes and looks at their worm and says, why is this thing stuck on that machine? What is going on here? It's been there for 2 hours. It still hasn't moved and kills the threat. That is a very clever thing to do.
Is there a way for that evil server to know that it's La Brea on the other side?
Is there a way for you to know that it's La Brea? Yes. He answered me with a window size of 5. Can I have the source code for La Brea? Of course, it's open source. Can I change it so it's not a window size of 5? Yeah, you can make it any window size you want. Can I tell that it's La Brea? No. So if you use it out of the box, yeah, easy. But if it's not out of the box, nope, don't know. Could this be a wonderful defensive tool? It could be. I'm not a big proponent of sticking like stuff like that out on the internet directly, because that is just asking for trouble. You're going to piss people off, and now they're going to want to really kill you. So instead, the way I recommend using something like that is on the inside of your network. Do you have parts of your network that there shouldn't be anybody talking to? Do you have IP address space that is unused, subnets that are unused? What if you stuck a tar pit over there? Because if you've got malware inside or had some other infection or compromise in lateral movement, it doesn't know that that's not a valid network for you. And anything that shows up in that log is really important to deal with.
It's like a honeypot?
It's like a honeypot, yeah. Yeah, it's like a honeypot. But we're not using it to catch them. We're using it as an indicator of compromise. That's it.